case of Lott against Colvin. Ms. Cacciari.
May it please the Court. My name is Marie Cacciari, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Nancy Lott in her appeal of the District Court's decision to uphold Administrative Law Judge Bruning's decision to deny her claim for disability insurance benefits under the Social Security Act. In this case, the Administrative Law Judge's decision was not supported by substantial evidence and must be reversed for two reasons. First, the ALJ's residual functional capacity assessment did not properly account for all of plaintiff's physical and mental impairments and limitations. And secondly, the Administrative Law Judge's credibility finding was patently wrong. In regard to the ALJ's credibility assessment, Administrative Law Judge Bruning relied heavily on the fact that plaintiff was ceased working due to a business-related layoff, but had been diagnosed with many of her medical conditions prior to ceasing working. And from that, the Administrative Law Judge inferred that plaintiff's impairments would not continue to prevent her from performing her prior occupation as a secretary. And this Court has held on countless occasions that an individual's struggle to continue working despite a serious medical condition does not correlate with non-disability prior to ceasing working. And that is particularly important in this case because plaintiff testified at the hearing and also reported to the Social Security Administration that prior to ceasing working, she was having great difficulty performing her occupational duties. She required assistance from her employer and coworkers, and she had been missing significant amount of work time due to her medical conditions and required treatment.
Her job as a secretary was where?
She was at a tool and manufacturing company.
For an executive there or something, or just a pool secretary, or do we know?
I don't know, but she was a secretary, and she'd been working there since 1986. The Administrative Law Judge also relied heavily on plaintiff's receipt of unemployment benefits, but this Court has held that the receipt of unemployment benefits does not establish the ability to work, and the Social Security Administration has taken the position that an individual need not choose between applying for unemployment benefits and Social Security disability benefits. And that's particularly important when someone is financially desperate and needs to do this to survive. And in this case, although plaintiff is currently working part-time as a companion to a blind woman, she is earning as little as $5,500 per year. She is single and she lives alone. The Administrative Law Judge also did consider plaintiff's daily activities, but failed to consider the manner in which plaintiff performs those activities, and that is legal error. For example, the Administrative Law Judge placed great emphasis on the fact that plaintiff can drive, but she also testified that she can only drive during the day, locally for short distances, when it is light and clear outside due to her visual impairments. The Administrative Law Judge...
Did you make some reference that Illinois grants driver's licenses to people who are blind?
Well, she does have a driver's license. She is not blind, Your Honor, but she does have visual impairments.
Which is noted on her license, then.
I don't know, Your Honor. The Administrative Law Judge also cited the fact that she's able to watch TV, but plaintiff testified and she had a friend corroborate her statement that she has difficulty seeing the picture. Another example is that the Administrative Law Judge emphasized that she can use the computer, but she testified and reported to the Social Security Administration that she can only use the computer for approximately 30 minutes at a time, a couple times per week. That would come out to about an hour a week. Plaintiff also requires great assistance from her family in performing almost all active household duties, including cleaning, grocery shopping, and preparing meals. And
that impairment with regard to the computer is because of her carpal tunnel syndrome?
And also her visual impairments, Your Honor. She also has difficulty concentrating and focusing due to her mental impairments. And then the Administrative Law Judge also cited plaintiff's ability to work part-time as a companion to a blind woman, but plaintiff only works 3 hours per day, 4 days per week, and that work involves mostly sitting, relaxing, and talking with the individual who she is a companion to. So that work is extremely minimal and does not equate to full-time work. Lastly, the Administrative Law Judge relied on boilerplate language in articulating her credibility findings. And this is something that this Court has criticized on countless occasions. And not only is that language meaningless boilerplate, as this Court described it in Shoger v. Estrue, but the problem here is that the credibility finding came after the administrative law judge's residual functional capacity assessment. And as this court explained in Bjornsson versus Estrue, the use of such language demonstrates flawed reasoning because the administrative law judge's credibility assessment should have preceded her assessment of the individual's functional capacity, and it should have been taken into account in coming to that conclusion. This is a perfect segue into the errors in the ALJ's residual functional capacity assessment. And in regard to that aspect, the administrative law judge completely ignored plaintiff's mental impairments. Plaintiff has been diagnosed with both major depressive disorder and generalized anxiety, and she was given a global assessment of functioning score of 55. And this was by a psychologist who was retained by the Social Security Administration to examine her. And that represents moderate difficulties in social or occupational functioning or moderate symptoms. Another psychologist...
Did she prescribe medication for that?
She has been prescribed medication, Your Honor.
By that doctor or by another doctor?
By another doctor. She takes Zoloft and Nortriptyline.
Was it her gynecologist or something?
It was her urologist.
Urologist. Prescribing medicine for mental problems?
That is what the record reflects. And one of the reasons that the administrative law judge cited for dismissing plaintiff's mental impairments is the fact that she hasn't pursued mental health treatment or she hasn't undergone psychiatric hospitalization. But this court has held that that is not a reason that you can dismiss an individual's mental impairments because a mental illness itself may be the reason that an individual cannot pursue or does not pursue proper mental health treatment. And in this case, the administrative law judge completely failed to factor in her mental impairments. Despite her moderate difficulties in concentration, persistence, and pace, moderate difficulties in focusing, moderate difficulties in memory and concentration, all of which were documented by psychologists retained by the Social Security Administration. In regard to the plaintiff's physical impairments, despite acknowledging plaintiff's bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome as a severe impairment, the administrative law judge did not properly account for her deficiencies on account of this impairment. The ALJ limited plaintiff to frequent hand use in her residual functional capacity assessment, but failed to explain how that properly accounted for her severe bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome. And according to Social Security ruling 96-8P, an ALJ's residual functional capacity assessment must set forth a narrative discussion identifying the evidence that supports the conclusion reached. And the case law from this circuit holds that an administrative law judge must build an accurate and logical bridge from the evidence to the conclusion reached. Lastly, the administrative law judge failed to require the combined effect of all of plaintiff's impairments. And that is really important in this case because not only does plaintiff suffer from depression, anxiety, and carpal tunnel syndrome, but she has diabetes mellitus type 1, which is insulin dependent and was diagnosed in 1976. She's also had a kidney and pancreas transplant. She also suffers from hypertension, osteoporosis, frequent urinary tract infections, frequent urination, digestive problems, and frequent fractured bones. And so in sum, the ALJ's decision denying plaintiff's claim for social
security. Did the ALJ make reference to that series of maladies that she has?
She did reference some of these maladies, but she failed to consider the aggregate effect of all of those impairments together, and that is what the case law from this circuit requires, and that is what the Social Security Administration requires. And if there are no further questions, Your Honor, I would like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Siegel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Siegel. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. Claimant's counsel states that the ALJ has left out restrictions on various impairments that she had. The ALJ here explained very clearly why she did not credit some of the limitations that claimants claimed she had, because they were not supported by the record as a whole, and they were contradicted by not only medical records, but also claimant's own statements about what she's able to do and the treatment that she received. For example, the hearing loss that the claimant seems to have or claims that she has is absolutely not supported by the record. Although she did have three surgeries that the claimant talks about, they occurred remotely in 2004 and 2007. And following the surgeries, her hearing actually improved dramatically, and that's noted by her doctor.
I assume she had hearing tests in connection with the surgery.
She had a hearing test prior to the surgery in March 2007 that showed some hearing loss, and then shortly after the surgery, it was a putting in tubes to release pressure behind the middle ear.
And she was tested again after that.
She was not tested again. The doctor asked her to follow up with evaluations, but the claimant told him that her hearing loss had dramatically improved, and he also observed that, and Dr. Alonzo also said that her ear examination was then normal, and that there was another follow-up in November of 2007, and again, she had a normal hearing exam. And although the doctor suggested that she follow up periodically with an audiogram, she did not do so. He also suggested
that
if
she was one after surgery. An audiogram.
There was an audiogram prior to surgery
that
showed hearing loss, but there was not one after.
All that was based on her comments and the doctor's
examination.
Observation of,
and then also an inference from the fact that she did not follow through with getting hearing aids. He suggested that if she was having problems with hearing, that she could get a hearing aid to amplify the sound. And he also suggested she could get a loaner hearing aid, and she didn't. She didn't follow through with any of that. And at the hearing, she also testified that she did not use a hearing aid, and she was able to testify without any problems. She answered questions without need to repeat, to increase the volume or to hear better. Probably one of the most significant activities that shows that she has no impact from her hearing condition is the fact that she's a companion for a blind person, and she would primarily communicate with that person verbally. So the ALJ considered all of these things when she was assessing whether to make a restriction based on an allegation of hearing loss. And there's no question that was a well-supported decision. With regard to her vision, you asked about the driver's license. She does not have any restrictions on her driver's license. She said that to the examining psychologist at page 576 of the record, that she's never had her driver's license suspended, she's never had it revoked, she has a valid driver's license, she doesn't have any issues with her driver's license. Her eye condition was described by her ophthalmologist, Dr. Weinberg, as stable. She did have a retinal detachment in 1998 for which she had surgery, but again, that's very remote, and her condition has been stable since then. When the ophthalmologist assessed her functioning, he found that she was unlimited in most areas of her vision, and the only thing that he limited her was from heights, and the ALJ gave a restriction that accommodated the exposure to hazards and heights and things like that. So that is actually the only assessment in the record that limits her vision, and the ALJ accommodated that. And again, her activities are fairly significant, and the ALJ considered those, and things like reading and using the computer for things like checking her email and for actually applying for the job of a companion online. And again, she is a companion for a blind person, so it makes sense that she would need at least, she would need good vision to do that. She is helping someone who cannot see. With regard to her mental impairment, the ALJ considered the entire record, and the claimant focuses on an assessment by Dr. Renzi, who is an examining psychologist. Dr. Renzi saw the claimant for 40 minutes in October of 2009, and during that evaluation, the claimant told Dr. Renzi that she had auditory and visual hallucinations and delusions and suicidal ideation. And when the ALJ asked the claimant about these things at the hearing, she denied having hallucinations, auditory or visual hallucinations or delusions. So it appears that the statements that she made to Dr. Renzi were not supported by her own testimony at the hearing, and they are certainly not supported by any treatment in the record. There is some mention of being treated with Zoloft for depression in 2008 and October 2007.
Was his report a matter of checking boxes, or was it written?
It was a written report, but it was, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you're getting statements from the claimant saying that I have auditory and visual hallucinations and you're taking her at her word, then you're going to find that she's moderately limited in some of her abilities. But those statements are not borne out by the record, and she certainly received no treatment for those kinds of conditions. She did get some Zoloft in 2007 and 2008.
Prescribed by who?
You know, it's not clear because the record is from the University of Iowa, and it actually is just a list of her medications, so it doesn't say that it was specifically prescribed by someone. It looks like they're more like just listing the medications. The other area where we see a prescription is noradrenaline, and it doesn't appear that is actually prescribed for depression, because Dr. Ubeliz, who is her neurologist, seems to prescribe it for migraine headaches. It's 617 of the record, on I think it's March 2010. He talks about her using noradrenaline and it for preventative of migraine headaches, and that she had stopped using that for a short time and had a return of the headaches, and then, you know, he re-prescribed it. So it's not even clear that at that point she's using it for depression. Dr. Ubeliz never diagnoses depression or anxiety. So the depression anxiety diagnosis from this examining physician is not supported by the majority of the record, or not even by her own testimony. So the ALJ was correct to not give those findings weight, and then those findings were used by the state agency physician to assess restrictions, because that examining physician found a moderate GAF 55, and then in the B criteria findings that the state agency physician made, he finds moderate restrictions would correspond with that GAF. So the ALJ was correct to say that this is not supported, and she looks through the record and talked about the examination findings from that examining physician and from the state agency. So these are all things that the ALJ considered. And also the ALJ considered the claimant's actual activities, which did not show a moderate restriction in social functioning or a moderate restriction in activities of daily living. She's working as a companion for a woman who she was hired by the woman's husband, who's a doctor. It's very unlikely that he would have hired someone who had restrictions in social functioning to care for his wife 3 hours a day, 4 days a week. You would be able to tell if the claimant had moderate restrictions in social functioning. She wouldn't have gotten along with people well, and that's simply not supported by the record. And the ALJ talks about those things, and those are things that she considered not just in a paragraph after the RFC. She actually considers the credibility of her statements during the step two process of determining severe impairments. It's throughout the decision that the ALJ is considering the claimant's credibility, and that's borne out by the way she structures her decision. Let's see. The hand restrictions that the ALJ assessed were also consistent with the record. They're consistent with a state agency reviewing physician that assessed frequent restrictions on hand function due to her hand weakness. We have an examining physician who did an examination of her hands during the relevant period in October of 2009, Dr. Tamara Gorey. And Dr. Tamara Gorey, although he talks about the claimant's allegations about not being able to pick up coins and having left hand weakness, when he actually examines her, he finds that she has full grip strength, 5 out of 5, and full manipulation ability, 5 out of 5, and normal strength, again, 5 out of 5 in the upper extremities. So although he may be listing things that she told him before the examination, the actual examination findings show quite functional abilities with her hand use. And so actually the ALJ crediting the restriction for frequent handling and feeling and hand use is fairly generous. I would ask that the court. Okay, thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Cacciari?
I would just like to clarify a couple points made by my opposing counsel. First, in regard to plaintiff's visual impairments, she states that there are no issues with her driver's license, but it is important to keep in mind the plaintiff only drives short distances during the day when it is light and clear outside. She also doesn't even drive to her part-time work as a companion. She gets a ride from her daughter. So she's very conservative in how much she drives and her ability to do so. Secondly, in regard to her mental impairments, my opposing counsel said that her reports to Dr. Renzi, the psychologist retained by the Social Security Administration, were inconsistent with the record. At the hearing, and this is at the record at page 43, she admits to having suicidal thoughts, and she also admits to having hallucinations. When asked by the administrative law judge about that, she also admitted to having paranoia. This is very important because her reports of her psychological limitations are complete in the record and at the hearing are completely consistent with what she told Dr. Renzi at the psychological consultative examination. And it is not garbage in and garbage out. Dr. Renzi wrote a lengthy report that's approximately 5 pages long, which details Ms. Lott's the fact that she has a depressed mood. She also admitted to having crying spells on a weekly basis, and he examined her personally and made an assessment regarding his examination of her symptoms and condition.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.